The Pyramid of Lies, written and read by Duncan Maven. For the glossary, please refer to the accompanying PDF, which will be available to download from your audiobook library. Author's note: when Greensill Capital began its rapid meltdown in March 2021, the effects were felt around the world, from the UK to Japan, from Australia to the coalfields of West Virginia. Billions of dollars of investors' money was missing, billions more simply written off. Top politicians and financiers began desperately trying to distance themselves from their entanglement with a startup firm that had promised to make them rich and then imploded in spectacular fashion. Lex Greensill, the firm's charismatic super salesman CEO, was supposed to be the next big thing in global finance. Suddenly, he was an arch villain, his grinning photo appearing on nightly news and on front pages everywhere. Greensill Capital's rise had been swift, but its demise was even speedier. Most of the 1,000 or so employees had had no idea of the failings at the company they worked for, or the allegations of fraud. And then it was over. By then, Greensill had gone mainstream. A photo I had been given by a source showed ex-UK Prime Minister David Cameron and Lex Greensill sitting cross-legged in twin blue suits at the desert retreat of the controversial leader of Saudi Arabia. When we published it at the Wall Street Journal, the photo instantly went viral. Within a couple of hours, it popped up on the main BBC news bulletin. Then, it started to appear on news websites. The next day, it was republished on just about every front page in the UK press. That didn't surprise me. The photo of the Australian banker and the former Prime Minister lounging at the luxurious desert campsite of the Saudi prince seemed to underscore everything the public felt was wrong about the revolving door of politics and business. For me, it also illustrated Lex's rapid and unlikely ascent to global power player. As a reporter, I'd first written about Lex Greensill in 2019. Greensill Capital was a difficult firm to cover, not least because accurate information was always hard to get your hands on. Greensill's corporate public relations strategy was aggressive and erratic. On several occasions, they would tell me one thing was true, and then tell me the opposite days later. The firm's lawyers were quick to pull the trigger threatening legal action. They frequently denied things that later turned out to be accurate. I've never before worked on a story where so many potential sources would ask for financial reward before they would agree to talk. Naturally, I always refused. Greensill Capital also suffered from an incredibly gossipy culture, perhaps because so much centered on Lex himself. Even seasoned senior executives were often left relying on second-hand bits of information to ascertain what was going on at the company they worked for. Sometimes, very plugged-in sources would tell me something they believed to be true because it came from Lex himself or someone very close to him, but they were later proved wrong. Lex's rapid downfall was a surreal moment. For most of the time I'd been covering Greensill, it felt as if I was shouting into an abyss. I would bore friends and colleagues harping on about a fast-growing supply chain finance, SCF, business that was either going to change banking forever or would be the next major financial scandal. But I couldn't tell if anyone else cared. Then suddenly Greensill blew up and everyone cared. I wasn't the only journalist covering Greensill's rise and fall. Far from it. Reporters at Bloomberg, the Financial Times, the Sunday Times, and Reuters all did sterling work uncovering the reality about Lex's business, as did several of my Dow Jones colleagues at Financial News and the Wall Street Journal. Many of these reporters had their own brushes with Greensill's aggressive public relations and legal strategies. At one point, Greensill even took Reuters to court.